Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Baseball America Prospects Deep Dive. I am Carlos Collazo, stealing the hosting desk from JJ Cooper, who is here with me to break down a pretty solid Reds farm system here. So JJ, I have to say, I don't really envy you doing this list. It seems like a fun list to write up, but in terms of how you line these guys up, I feel like it probably gave you a lot of headaches because I'm not sure if there was a more contentious 1-2 debate between Rhett Lauder and Chase Burns than any other org. So tell me a little bit about how we settled on Rhett Lauder at one, how painstaking that was for you, and maybe we can get into the weeds on kind of what separates these pitchers, how they're different, how they're similar, and what we expect from them.
I don't know right now if I did it right. I really don't. Like, when you try to get to talk to people, watch as much video, dig into our reports going back years. Mm-hmm. I did one with Josh Norris recently where he's like, this is 1A and 1B. Mm-hmm. This is very much 1A and 1B. If you want to argue that Chase Burns, you like Chase Burns as a prospect better, I get it. I understand. If you are talking about upside, Chase Burns has more upside than Rhett Lauder. Not a question. It's not really a debate. However, so you say, well, then why is Rhett Lauder number one? And what I would say about that is that Rhett Lauder is one of those pitchers who I just feel really comfortable, really confident about his ability to be a really good, solid, consistent, durable starting pitcher who does that for years. It's a comp I've used a couple of times, but it really does feel like if you look at where Aaron Nola was when he was coming out of the SEC, and you look at where Rhett Lauder is now, there are some similarities. There are some similarities from the standpoint of both were always effective. Both were dominant college pitchers. Both were durable. And if you had a knock about both of them, you would say, like, when Aaron Nola was coming out, it's like, his stuff's good. It's not great. Rhett Lauder's stuff's good. It's not great. But what stood out? And if you look at his major league outings at the end of last year, you could slice those two different ways if you wanted. On one hand, you could say his numbers, his ERA, his runs allowed were way better than how he actually pitched. Mm-hmm. And you could make that argument. Didn't strike out a ton of guys, walked some guys. His FIP was way worse than his ERA. Flip side of it is if you watched, and I tried to watch every pitch. I think I watched every pitch that he threw in the majors last year. And if you plot those, the other thing that stands out is, and this is what's made Rhett Lauder really good going back to his career at Wake Forest. When you talk about command, and there's a lot of quantifying command now, and command's always been difficult because, okay, if you quantify command based off where the catcher's mitt when a pitcher's set up, you know, when the catcher's set up for the pitcher, sometimes that's not actually where they're really trying to hit. Like, if you watch a Rays game, and you're like, the catcher's set up in the middle of the plate every time, but they did end up in the middle of the plate. Yeah, they trust their stuff to end up on the edges. But when you look at a guy like Lauder, the way I would say, if you also want to define command, command is avoiding making bad misses. And no one did a better job of that at the big league level in a short stint last year than Rhett Lauder. If you look at every fastball that Rhett Lauder threw, it's almost without fail, they were with purpose. He would miss, but he would miss in areas that No big deal. Miss a little up. They don't swing at it. Okay, ball. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Let's do it again. What he didn't do is throw that fastball that missed low, where it's like, oh, it's in the heart of the plate. And by the way, if Rhett Lauder misses in the heart of the plate, he doesn't throw. There's nothing about his fastball that's good enough that won't get tattooed if, you know, mm-hmm. if he did that too often. But he doesn't do that. If you look at his secondaries, every one of them, there's a purpose to them. And so at the end of the day, if you said, well, what do you think Rhett Lauder is going to be? I think on this rotation, if it all breaks right, Rhett Lauder is probably the number three starter. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel really good about the likelihood that he can be an effective and durable. I also want to bring up durable because that's one thing the Reds have also done with these both these guys. Both these guys have long track records of pitching innings and being healthy.
It's really fun to talk about these two together because there are a lot of similarities with them, and they're almost entirely different pitchers as well. Both Wake Forest products. Ultimately, Chase Burns obviously was at Tennessee before transferring to Wake for his draft year. Both taken in the top 10 by the Reds. Like you mentioned, they were both workhorse innings eaters in college. We've got them 26 and 27 are on our 100. So it almost is like, it matters more what your preferences are as a fan or an evaluator or a scout as to who you're taking at the top of the system. And I think JJ, like 2016, JJ would be shocked that you went with the command-oriented Rhett Lauder versus the ultimate like flame-throwing dragon that Chase Burns is. Because I'm with you. If I had to pick one, I would probably go Rhett Lauder. There are people that look at Chase Burns, though, and they say, hey, Rhett Lauder doesn't touch the upside and pure stuff and the bat missing ability that Chase Burns has. So why don't you like lay out the case for Chase Burns and why it was so difficult? Because he's a lot of fun to watch.
Chase Burns stuff is good enough that there is a scenario where a Chase Burns reaches the 90th percentile outcome of his peak possibilities that he's like, hey, Hunter Green, you're on number two now. That's possible, right? Like, he's that good. Like if you look at his pure stuff and you said, could this guy be the ace of the staff on a team that does have, I would say Hunter Green, you could argue is a legit number one. If you throw, you know, again, durability, he started to show it, effectiveness. You at least you would say that Hunter Green's a two, but with a chance to be a one. Chase Burns could be better than that. The fastball, it might be better than Hunter Green's. Not like he does not reach the peak levels velocity wise that Hunter Green does, but I think the fastball is actually a more effective pitch than Hunter Green's. It plays a little better, the movement of it's a little better. You talk about the slider, it could end up being the best breaking ball from last year's draft class. Very possible. That's not crazy in any way to suggest. Like, we've got a 70 on his fastball, we got a 70 on his slider. So then you could rightfully say, then why is he not number one? Whereas Lauder's track record was almost, I would describe it as, you know, like an unimpeachable kind of just steady rise in his time at Wake. His track record, even in pro ball, he did hit a little bit of a speed bump in double A, adjusted, relied on his two seamer a little bit more, made a couple more adjustments. Boom, he's in the big leagues and he's having success in the big leagues. Chase Burns hasn't pitched as a pro yet in an official game, so that's a little bit more uncertain. But on top of that, Chase Burns' college career was a little bit more uneven than that. He was a revelation as a freshman at Tennessee, but there was a reason he transferred. He lost his spot in the rotation as a sophomore and then ended up transferring to Wake Forest, had a very good junior year, broke, Rhett Lauder's Wake Forest strikeout record. But I would say, though, if you said overall who had the better junior year at Wake Forest, I would go with Rhett Lauder, who I'm going to really struggle to ever not remember the fact that they gave the ball to Rhett Lauder, said, hey, that's Paul Skene standing on the mound. It's one of the best lineups in college baseball you're ever going to see that you're facing. And he's like, don't worry, I've got this. And he did. He basically matched Skene 0-for-0. The only reason they lost that game is because at some point he had to jog off the mound. It's like, look, I can't throw 175 pitches today. But as long as he was in that game, Wake Forest wasn't losing. And that's where he had more of those moments. He's had more of those moments where this is not a knock against Chase Burns, who's had moments of domination. I would say that at his best, he's just better. Consistency-wise, Rhett Lauder's kind of a metronome, right? Mm-hmm. It's like every time out, you kind of know what you're going to get. Chase Burns, as of yet, it's a little bit more of as best is better and as worst is not as good. Mm-hmm. And again, part of that is Rhett Lauder's pitching in the big leagues. Chase Burns has yet to throw a pro pitch. If those were reversed, if Chase Burns had reached the majors and Rhett Lauder hadn't thrown a pitch, it would be clear that Chase Burns would be number one on this list. Mm-hmm. But I do think that that is important because part of this is like, you know, making it through even the pro ball on the minor league side, being healthy and reaching the majors is significant. But again, this is 1A, this is 1B. Carlos, you've seen both of these guys a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, what stands out to you about Burns? And like, what, like, again, that I don't want to say the worst case scenario for any of these guys is, beyond even taking injuries out of it, is that they just regress, right? There are pitchers who back up. But if Chase Burns is this Chase Burns and his stuff doesn't back up, mm-hmm. the kind of nightmare scenario is he's a really good reliever with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that reliever point, because I think that maybe is the one biggest question. If you were like a big Chase Burns pessimist, that you could say, you look at his college track record and he has a lot of innings as a starter, his junior year pitching full time as a starter, going deep into games, maintaining his stuff. And his career walk rate is like between 7 or 8%. So it's really solid control. I would say the one thing you look at the delivery, it's a lot more effort. It's a lot more intensity than a guy like Rhett Lauder, both in terms of like makeup on the mound and just how mechanically the delivery works. I don't think, you mentioned this in talking about Rhett Lauder, the big separation is the command piece. Chase Burns has the stuff where he doesn't necessarily need that command, but I do wonder, we've seen some college pitchers who their stuff is just so loud, they're able to get away with missing their spots more frequently. Is it going to be a case where Chase Burns' control backs up in pro ball because his wipeout stuff that's darting out of the zone just gets swinged out less frequently or swung out less frequently? I could see that. I mean, even me, like as like wanting to, I guess, like Hagen Smith a little bit more because the delivery just seems a little more starter-ish. When you see Chase Burns just blowing it by people in the zone, his control is really solid. He's around the zone enough. So I think that little bit of reliever risk and the fact that, again, we haven't seen him quite yet in pro ball, those are some of the questions you can have. But like you were talking about, I find myself pretty torn just thinking about these guys. I'll let you add anything else if you want to put a bow on it, but I am curious to get further down the list too.
To put a bow on it, the other thing I would just say that stands out here is I know there are a lot of frustrated Reds fans out there because it's been quite a while since there's been like real like postseason success. And I get that. You're not wrong. You know, it's been 1990 is, you know, a long, long time ago. However, I do think when we talk about the pitching, the other thing that does stand out here is the Reds have made a clear point of trying to develop a really impressive homegrown rotation. And that's where they are now. Like we talk about Lauder pitched in the big leagues last year. I don't know if he'll make their opening day rotation, not because he showed any glaring flaws where you're like, oh, he needs more time, but because they've got Hunter Green, who, again, they've signed to an extension. He was excellent last year. They've got Andrew Abbott, who's been extremely reliable, durable. When we talk about like Rhett Lauder being a middle rotation guy, that's kind of what Andrew Abbott, you know, is kind of that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. They've got Nick Lodolo, who has had flashes, hasn't put it all together as consistently, has had trouble with health. But if he's healthy, he's part of that rotation. They went out and acquired Brady Singer, who with the Jonathan India trade, Singer could be in their pen, could be in the rotation. But I would say right now you start by thinking he's probably in the rotation. And then they got Nick Martinez, who they re-upped, who offered the qualifying offer and then he took it. And to their credit on that, he's a guy who really could be, where do you need me, guys? I can be in the rotation. I can be in the bullpen, and I'm going to be very effective in kind of either role. But that kind of means that Lauder, could be part of that rotation from day one, or it could be like, hey, we're going to send you back to AAA for a little bit more seasoning, and we expect you to spend a good bit of time here this upcoming year. That's really impressive. As far as I know, that obviously Singer was acquired in trade, Nick Martinez was a free agent, but the rest of that's a homegrown group. And that's kind of something I think the Reds have to do if they're going to have success. They're not going to go out and spend, you know, and they're not signing Gerrit Cole in the free agent market, but building their own rotation of guys who are really effective, which also, by the way, I think makes their bullpen better, because we didn't even talk about like guys like Graham Ashcraft and all who have started for them. But if this all works out, that may make them very effective relievers. They're working on something here.
Yeah, the Reds have to hit on the draft and develop players. And I think just really quickly, like looking at their recent success in the first round, going back to 2017, they've really hit on 7 of their last 8 first rounders. It's Hunter Green, Jonathan India, Nick Lodolo, Matt McClain, Cam Collier, Rhett Lauder, and Chase Burns. The one miss we're talking about is Austin Hendrick from 2020. The 2020 draft is as good as any to miss in, considering the circumstances. So the Reds have some things piling up. I would love to go as in-depth with every player on this list, JJ, as Lauder and Burns. We can't do that on this podcast, but if you guys do want as much depth and as info as JJ can hand you, definitely check out the website, baseballamerica.com. If you subscribe, you can get full scouting reports on the Reds, every other team in baseball. We just added 10 prospects who missed in every system, so you got 31 through 40s as well. But JJ, next, after a break, I want to get into maybe an overlooked number 3 player in this system, Chase Petty. We'll get to that in a sec.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
And we're back. JJ, so we talked about 1-2. We talked about the debate up top. Chase Burns, definitely the most famous name in this Red system. But there's another Chase on the mound, another right-handed pitcher, who you have sold me on, I would say, over the past 6 to 8 months or so. Talk to me a little bit about Chase Petty, why people might be underrating him, what your expectations are for him. And I guess if there was a clear number 3 and what kind of the gap is between 1 and 2 and that third prospect in the system.
You could argue if Duno had been healthy, right? Alfredo Duno, the catcher, the young catcher, is number 4 on this list. But we've now had 2 years in a row where it's like it's kind of been lost seasons for him in some ways. 2 years ago, he couldn't catch because of an injury. Last year, his season was cut very short because of injury. That kind of, I would say, made it a pretty clear number 3. I keep going back to this, and yes, you're right. 2015, JJ is kind of wondering what's happened to me in my old age here, because there was a time where I'd be like, Chase Petty, that's nice. Like, it's funny, like, hey, I don't know if anyone has ever changed their perception more.
I was about to say, JJ, 2016 JJ would have loved high school Chase Petty because he was an absolute 102. Flamethrower. All of a sudden, he's this low 90s command-oriented pitcher. It's weird.
He's had a very interesting progression. Twins pick, who then was quickly traded to the Reds, was 102 miles an hour with the delivery that made you kind of like hide your eyes when he was in college, right?
Yeah. Or high school.
High school, yeah, sorry. High school. Yeah. You know, was it the pandemic year or was it the year after? Because I remember watching games on games that starts were streamed on YouTube.
Yeah, his high school team did a really good job. They were actually broadcasting his game. So in the spring, we're watching him on video and it was like, look how hard this guy's throwing. He doesn't really know where he's going, and these poor high school kids have to step in for an erratic 102 miles per hour.
it seemed like one of the more frightening at bats you'd ever watch.
Yes.
And then as a Red, he got to this point where you would describe him as sit 92, 91 to 93, sinking it, running it, showing some pitchability, showing some location. But it's like, wait a second. Chase Petty, the guy that was 102, didn't know where I was going to go. Mm-hmm. And to his credit last year was a little bit of a blend. The stuff is back to some, like he pitches 92, 93, 94, you know, but there's 98 when he needs it now. Mm-hmm. Like it's not something where there was a year or two there where it was like, you weren't seeing that upper 90s.
Top end.
Yep. Now you see the top end. Even though he doesn't live there all the time, he doesn't view it as he needs to live there all the time, but you'll see a seven if he needs a seven, but he can really pitch. He keeps adding pitches, which I do think is something that speaks to both his aptitude, his feel for adjustments, and makes me feel good about what the next 10 years are going to look like. Because mm-hmm. if you're a pitcher, most pitchers, okay, maybe the Spencer Striders of the world can just, you know, go out there and be like, here's who I am. You try to handle it. Most starting pitchers in the big leagues kind of have to every now and then reinvent themselves a little bit mm-hmm. because, hitters have adjusted to this. Now am I going to adjust to them? Petty's done a lot of that in the minor leagues. Again, we talked about he's got four-seamer and two-seamer. He's added a cutter. He's got a slider. There's a changeup that you can use right now that you would see as a big league effective change of pace pitch. He can put all those together to where you're looking at it and saying the guy who was 102 and you had no idea where was going to go, you know, when he was in high school, now is a guy who I would project as not boring, but like a more of a sedate kind of like back at number four, right? And number yeah. fours are really valuable. A number four starter is a guy who, if he can give you that, and last year showed him start to build the innings back up again too.
Yep, 28 starts, 137 innings, overall 4.2 ERA between AA and AAA. Only two starts in AAA, but he did get there. And what stands out to me about Petty, as you're talking about him earlier, you said if you have a lot of velocity, it just means you have more room for error. It seems like he just dialed back, whether it was intentional or not, he could afford to lose some velocity, add a little bit of moxie on the mound. And if you look at his minor league career right now, four seasons, 300 plus innings, it's a 3.1 walk per nine, JJ. If you told me Chase Petty has that sort of walk rate over his minor league career, had a strong year in the upper levels when he was in high school, I'd be thrilled with that outcome. So I guess like moving forward, what's your confidence in starter versus reliever profile with him if he gets an opportunity in this, what we've already talked about is a pretty deep homegrown pitching staff for the Reds? And how much longer does he need to kind of refine himself in the minors? When's he going to reach the big leagues?
As you said, he reached AAA at the end of last year. I would expect he's going to spend most of this year at AAA. I think he's a better starter than reliever, to be honest. Like the Reds have had no fear of drafting stuff and being like, we'll figure out the control. Joe Boyle, who's now a Ray, but Joe Boyle was kind of the perfect example of this, like never could stay in a starting rotation in college because they'd watch him walk a couple of guys and it's like, yeah, we just can't, we have to stop, you know, like you. And then the Reds were like, if you walk the next five guys, we're going to count on you to get the three guys after that out. And he got better and better with 100 miles an hour stuff. Luis May in their bullpen, you know, Connor Phillips, Lyon Richardson. This is the team who has a number of these guys who you would say the stuff's great. We have no idea if he's going to throw enough strikes to make it effective. Those guys usually end up as relievers. Chase Petty, I'm not saying you couldn't fashion a way where Chase Petty goes to the pen and says, I'm going to be 98 regularly in short stints. But what makes Chase Petty good is kind of like, we could say the same thing with Rhett Lauder, I guess, but it's like, no. What makes him good is he's not writing a sonnet. He's not writing like a page in a book. He's looking at the totality of a 5, 6, 7 inning outing. And the way he tries to get you out in the first inning is different than the way he's trying to get you out in the fourth and different than the way he's trying to get you out that last time he faces you. So a guy who has that ability, a guy who can kind of mix and match a little bit like that, probably fits more as a starter. So what I would say about that is if everything goes right by the end of this year, I think it's not crazy at all to say that Chase Petty could be ready for the big leagues. I'd say probably 26 before he's like a full-time member of the rotation. But kind of an ideal scenario for the Reds is that a Petty, and maybe we throw a Chase Burns in there already by the end of the year. And if that happens, if this team does take steps forward, the other thing I would say with that is then you do have, hey, Nick Martinez, you're in our pen. Hey, Brady Singer, even necessarily, you're in our pen. And now all of a sudden this team goes into September, October, if they could make it to October, in a much deeper, much better situation because they have some more of these guys.
All right. Well, you've sold me on Chase Petty. We had him in the top 100. He was at the back of our top 100. I think I'm not sure where exactly you had him on your personal list, but I'm really excited about what he's going to do moving forward. We've talked about the pitching heavy nature of the top end of this list, but JJ, as we look further down the top 10 and into the system, what really stands out to me about the Reds is they've got a lot of intriguing hitters. They've got a lot of hitters at infield positions. There's kind of a glut of infielders at the major league level. They've already traded away from some of that depth. They've had players come up who have moved off primary positions just to try and fit all these bats in the lineup. You've got Alfredo Duno, who's a catcher. I don't know if you're going to classify that as strictly infield, but beyond him, Cam Collier, a third baseman, Edwin Arroyo, a shortstop, Sal Stewart, a second baseman. And then there's some exciting, highly projectable athletic shortstops beyond that. But how are you seeing the non-elite tier of this Red system? How are they going to figure out where all these players are going to play? Is that a good problem to have? Is it a bad problem to have? Who are you excited about? I guess just break down the rest of this top 10 for me.
Sure. So we've talked about Duno just a bit, but let's go beyond that. Like with Cam Collier, like you said, third base, we're starting to let him play some first base.
Yeah.
The next scout I talked to who really thinks that Cam Collier is a big league third baseman will be the first. If you watch him, the way I would say, like, if you said, well, why can't he play third base? I mean, he's big. Okay. But there are big guys who played third base. If the ball is hit more than about a step either way of Cam Collier right now, he goes to the ground. Like, and that's not a way that's going to work. I'm not saying as a third baseman that there aren't some reactions where, yes, you dive and you knock it down and it's got a really good arm. But that can't be your default way of fielding at third base. And that kind of is, in a lot of ways, Cam Collier's default way of fielding third base. Sal Stewart's a second baseman. I think there's a little bit more chance that he can play second, but he's probably a first baseman, maybe a left fielder down the road as well. But that's where I think that Edwin Arroyo, who missed last year, shoulder injury, Arroyo could be really interesting for the Reds, even though I don't really have a plausible path if everyone stays healthy. Like, Edwin Arroyo, he's not going to be a big leaguer for the Reds, logically, from the standpoint of, like, his value is as a very reliable, solid defender at short. The Reds, if I was going to pick a position where I said that they are best suited right now for the next 5 years, it's Elly De La Cruz, and it's not close, right? And I know that there are a couple of Reds fans out there who's like, why don't you put him in center field? Because he's a really, like, ride out the fact that he has some young shortstop issues. His issues at shortstop are very minor, and he does some things really well at shortstop. So if he's your shortstop, I don't think Edwin Arroyo's best value to the Reds is being a really good defensive third baseman. Or
he's not going to push Elly off the position.
So if that's the case, though, if Edwin Arroyo comes back and has a good season in the upper levels of the minors, do you know how many teams out there are who are like, oh, there's a young, big league ready shortstop who's a slam dunk, this guy's going to play shortstop guy? You do the Braves system. How much would the Braves, you know, be like, we could use one of those.
I'd love to just underline this comment that you're making, this point that you're making, JJ, because it does seem like every year in the international market, every international player who's not a pitcher is either a shortstop, an outfielder, or a catcher. 100%. And everyone is always like, what? We don't need another shortstop. We've got this major league shortstop. We got a couple other prospects. If you have too many good shortstop prospects, the problem takes care of itself. You trade from that strength. You move these athletic positions down the defensive spectrum. They can still play other positions. And like you said, no one is going to balk at the idea of acquiring a really talented defender at shortstop who's going to stick at the position. Figure out your other holes by moving a piece like that.
The question I would have, though, for Arroyo is, I do think his glove is better than his bat, to where and I'm not saying he's going to have extreme value, but like if you move him down the spectrum, he'll be good there. But I do think like he may have more value to another team. And by the way, beyond that, Tyson Lewis, Sammy Stafura, a couple of prep picks in the last couple of years, very interesting. We'll see, like neither of these guys are guys who are both a little bit away, you know, farther away. These are guys who in some ways are also kind of less traditional. These are not shortstops signed out of SoCal where it's like, yeah, I remember seeing him as a ninth grader when we were scouting the first rounder from this year's class and the first rounder for next year's class. Sammy Stafura, there are not a lot of shortstops who come out of New York, you know, high schools out of New York. That's Sammy. Tyson Lewis, when you say that, there are fewer who come out of Nebraska. And that's Tyson Lewis.
Highest drafted Nebraskan high schooler, I believe. So,
yes. You know, so, I mean, so basically, high school hitter. I should know. But yes. So those are two guys who you expect they'll take a little bit of time, but they're both very interesting. They do it different ways, but there's an intriguing athleticism. There's intriguing, you know, in Stafford's case, he kind of had solid performance last year. Lewis is obviously was drafted last year, so it's a little, you know, short, but definitely names to kind of keep an eye on, names to kind of file away that, this is a system that's got to build from within. If you wanted to knock this team right now, the problem I do think you could say about this Reds farm system is what the Reds big league team needs more than anything else. Like you and I recorded the Guardians top, you know, deep dive recently. And if Chase DeLauder was in the Reds system, it would be like, I know he's been hurt, but let's just write him in the outfield. Because the big problem that Cincinnati has had in recent years, they've had fourth outfielders playing as starting outfielders.
Yep.
And they can kind of get away with that a little bit if everyone's healthy, because they've got infielders playing in the outfield. If everyone's healthy, if Matt McClain hadn't missed last year and you're getting outfield production from Ellie De La Cruz and outfield production from Matt McClain. And to be clear, kind of Tyler Stevenson behind the plate is giving you better offense than you usually get out of a catcher. Then you can kind of make up for it a little bit, but there were too many replacement level or slightly above replacement level or slightly below replacement level outfielders getting regular at bats for the Reds. And then if you say, okay, well, who's the guy who's going to change that? I mean, Blake Dunn's another one of those. I think he could be a useful backup outfielder for them maybe this year. Hector Rodriguez, it's a scary profile when you have a guy who's got extreme bat to ball skills and swings at everything, but maybe him or an Ethan O'Donnell or maybe a Carlos Jorge, maybe one of these guys down the road, but they're probably not going to be like, just write that guy into the lineup and hope for, you know, 20 plus homers and above average offensive production. Yep. They don't really have that guy. And I don't think that the bats that we're talking about who are more defensively questioned at the top end are those guys either.
This tells me two things. One, how much the Reds really like Chase Burns in this past year's draft, because they did have an opportunity to take Charlie Condon, number two, who would get right into that role of fitting an outfield replacement in the future. And two, teams just aren't drafting for major league need. If they think Burns is the better player at the time, that's who they're going to pick. So
you can work those problems out. Let's just be clear. That's the thing where you do is yes.
Yep.
If you think a player A is better than player B in the draft, take player A.
Yep.
And again, the Reds are a perfect example of this. If you're a Reds fan listening to this, this is a team that had Joey Votto and then drafted Yonder Alonso in the first round. This is a team that had Devin Mesoraco and then drafted first rounder who's still playing. College catcher.
Grandal?
Yeah, Yasmani Grandal in the first round. So, like, they've never had a problem with saying, like, oh, yeah, I watched Joey Votto play in the outfield, because it's like, well, one of these guys may have to, but then they traded Alonso. Then they traded Grandal. These things work themselves out. They hit on those picks. Those were big leaguers. Those were big league regulars. You'd much rather do that than be like, this guy fits better. Oh, he's not very good. No, take the guys who have talent.
Absolutely. And JJ, as we wrap this up here, we're not going to go through every player in the system. Obviously, if you want to check out every player again, check out baseballamerica.com where you can see the full list and full reports, full grades for everyone. But is there a player or two that you want to mention outside of the top 10, someone a little bit deeper that you're excited about, that you want people to know about? Break it down for me.
Sheng In Lin, a true two-way player. Now, we'll see how much longer that lasts. But he's actually been that. Like, he was signed a couple of years ago now for 1.2 mil. And he was signed, you don't see this very often, but he was legitimately signed as a outfield slash shortstop slash right-hand pitcher. Which, by the way, I will say, if you, Reds-wise, do remember that Hunter Green was signed as a shortstop, as a right-hand pitcher slash shortstop. Never played shortstop for him, but did get to DH early on in his career before they said, no, you're going to just pitch. In Lin's case, they let him hit during the ACL last year, and he was really solid. He was really good. If you said, what position is he going to play as a position player long-term? Third base, outfield. But then, the way the complex league season works now, you know, that finishes a lot earlier than it used to. As soon as that was over, they said, okay, now for bridge league and all this, instructs, you're a pitcher. And he was even better as a pitcher. Like, when they saw him as a pitcher, they said, okay, next year, you're a pitcher who gets to hit. Now, that's going to make it a little bit more challenging to develop as a hitter because he's going to get to DH. This is the problem you always run into. Because, again, we should also bring out Mason Wynn, who did this in the minors, where it's like, you're a shortstop, but you're also a pitcher.
Bryce Eldridge.
You can't play both.
We'll see if it happens with Jack Caglione. Cruz Schoolcraft in our upcoming draft. It just happens. It's so hard to do. This is why I always say, maybe he'll be the exception, but I feel like Ohtani is not a harbinger of things to come. He just proves just how difficult it is to do that at a major league level.
But if you said to me, though, that Lin, if you asked me if Lin has multiple paths to the big leagues, 100%, because they really do like his ability as a pitcher. But they also, and again, not just inside the Reds organization, but you can talk to scouts who saw Lin play as a hitter and are like, no, there's real tools, talent, skills here as a hitter as well. I think he probably ends up as a pitcher. That seems like that's the direction we're heading. But he's really interesting. And I also would be remiss if I didn't bring up Luis May. Like, you could throw Zach Maxwell in there too. Like, they have two guys who throw really hard. But in May's case, I kind of like, it's been a slow burn with him. I remember during that pandemic year hearing about, like, oh, May was one of the standouts of their alt site and all that. He's throwing 100+. No idea where it was going to go. No idea. Like, when we talk about Chase Petty having no idea, Chase Petty had 10 times more of an idea than where Luis May did at that point. Mm-hmm. But he's gotten better and better and better. And the stat, probably one of my favorite stats to come up with for these scouting reports. So he throws, it's two seamers mainly. You cannot lift him. So right-handers hit 131, 321, 159 against May last year. He did not allow a triple or a home run all year. He allowed six doubles and 244 batters faced. He was the cliche of, like, if you went up without taking a bat to the plate, you had about as much chance because no one hits him. Now he just has to be able to not give up ball four before he gets to strike three a little bit more often, mm-hmm. you know, but again, he's making progress on that. He does touch 103. It's real stuff. And he's kind of interesting. And again, he's not that old. It's just been a slow development track so far.
Awesome. Well, nice to get another flamethrower in there for the JJ of old. I know that makes you excited. But JJ, thank you for the breakdown of the Reds. If you guys enjoyed this podcast, this YouTube video, we're running deep dive prospects breakdowns for every team in the league. We're about halfway done through the series at this point. So if you guys could go to our YouTube channel, give us a like, subscribe, hit the notification bell to get updates anytime we post a video. We've been really active on the YouTube channel. Really the last 6 months or so, but we're excited to keep doing these moving forward. Follow us on whatever podcast catcher you're using as well. If you give us a rating or review there, that would be really helpful. If you guys want to comment, have any questions, thoughts, feedback on the players we're talking about. I know JJ is always scouring the comments, and he'll get back to you very frequently. Also check out the site, baseballamerica.com. If you guys want to get all of the information we have, that's the best place to get it. We really appreciate the support and the subscriptions to allow us to do this. So for JJ, I'm Carlos. See you next time.